Something for the weekend. Good morning. It is Trina Mara and I'm delighted to have Steve Wall from The Stunning on the line. Hello, Steve. How are you?
Hey, Trina. How's it going?
Do you know what? Back in the day when I was only a young one, I still remember my sister and the stunning t-shirt that she used to wear day in, day out, and you couldn't borrow it for love nor money. There was no hope of getting it. It was a white t-shirt and I think it had like green writing on it and black writing, and it was basically just saying The Stunning and whatever venue you'd played. But my God, absolutely massive band.
I remember that t-shirt actually with, because on the album cover I think the logo was black and red letters, and then we sort of departed from it for some reason for that t-shirt, and it was like black and green.
Yeah.
And it was a really popular t-shirt. A fella showed up at a gig there about 2 years ago, I remember, wearing the original one.
Oh my God, I think it's long gone, but we'd love to have it, yeah.
The t-shirt was about 30 years old. I mean, it was basically in ribbons, but he was very proud of it. He wore it at a gig we did in Leopardstown a couple of years back. And I think we might have printed another run of those.
Really?
They sold out pretty quickly.
Are they gone though, are they? I'd love to get one for my sis.
They are gone. You know what? There might be one, though. I did see one. I'll check.
Check it.
And I'll let you know.
Imagine if I could get a signed t-shirt from Steve Wall. Oh, my God. I'd be the best sister in the world.
Let me check now, though. It might be gone now. I remember seeing it. It was lying around the studio. And, I'll have a look. But either way, I'd say we might do it again. It was a very popular one.
But I can't believe I remember that all these years later. Of course, I was only one at the time. Yeah, I wish. So that's why we're here to talk, really, isn't it? The 30th anniversary of the debut album from The Stunning. Does it seem like 30 years? Does it seem like 3 years?
Oh, it definitely feels like 30 years.
Does it?
I mean, 30 years. Funny, when you think of 30 years, you kind of think, I mean, it's a whole lifetime, you know. If you think of what happened in your life between the ages of 1 and 30, quite a lot, you know. So, I mean, there's been a lot of water under the bridge. I mean, the one thing I suppose that is kind of a pleasant surprise is that we're still talking about an album 30 years later, and it still means a lot to people, and it gains new fans all the time, you know, younger fans who, and it's funny, people always say that the songs haven't really aged. They still sound pretty fresh and kind of natural and organic. And I suppose, I mean, we wouldn't have known that at the time. We were a band that we were all about kind of the vibe, you know, about a kind of playing live, and we wanted our records to sound like that as well, like all the music that we grew up listening to, you know, everything from punk rock to Motown to country and rhythm and blues and all that kind of stuff, you know. We just loved the sound of certain records, and they all happened to be bands that just kind of recorded live and tried to capture performances. And that's, I suppose, what The Stunning were all about. And I think that record reflects that.
Oh yeah, just it brings you back to a place, a place and time as well. Would you have had young ones now hanging out at the stage door? Was it that rock and roll for you?
It was great, you know. Like, I suppose we've been around long enough to know what it was like when there was no internet. And post-internet, you know. So I was joking with, I was talking to some younger artist there recently, and he was sort of flagging me about being an old fogey. And I was saying to him, well, you will never experience the warm glow of getting fan mail, sacks of fan mail.
Oh, yeah.
Letters to the band that smell of cheap perfume and have a lipstick kiss on the back, you know. And
because they all kind of thought that they might be in with a shot, didn't they? They just might be. You might write back and you might go on a date.
Yeah, I mean, it was brilliant. You'd get presents and all. I mean, we used to get so much fan mail that our manager back in, this would have been in the early 90s, you know, or the late 80s, he opened up a post office box account in the GPO in Galway and would go up every week or so and get a sack of these letters. And, you know, we would sit down and open them. Sometimes it would be during the sound check or before a gig, because we were so busy back then. There were times we were gigging 7 nights a week around Ireland, and, you know, and driving over to do gigs in London as well in the middle of it. We thought nothing of getting into the back of a van, sitting. I mean, the first van that we used, a friend of ours had a van. There was no seats in the back. And we sat on top of the cases, you know, the drum kit and the guitar amps. We sat on those, and we would get into the van in Galway and drive all the way to London to play in the Mean Fiddler. There wasn't even heating in it. I remember we all climbed into sleeping bags with our clothes on. It was so cold. And I mean, that's the kind of thing you can only do in your 20s.
It's funny,
you know,
funny you mentioned about the fan mail and spending all the time going through it. I mean, now that would be a tweet and it would take you 20 seconds to read all the replies. It's such a different world.
Yeah, it's a different world, yeah. But, you know, I wouldn't change it for the world. It was it was great. You know, we were, I suppose, you know, we were kind of like, I suppose we were a pop band at the time. You know, we were sort of, you know, our audience was kind of like sort of late teenagers, kind of fifth, sixth year that went into then college, that followed us all throughout their college years.
I'm just trying to think, around 1990 was really the year, wasn't it, that album came out?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to think, my sister with the t-shirt, she would have been 17. So that was the perfect age, really, wasn't it? Yeah.
That was it. That was our audience. And it was a great audience to have because they sort of, we were their band like throughout their college years and everything. So we would have played a lot of colleges around the country, ragweek balls and things like that, and witnessed all sorts of debauchery with a whole new generation of young Irish people who were liberated, not as as kind of under the cosh of the church and everything, you know. They were much more liberated in every way. And so we witnessed a lot of that and some crazy, crazy times. It was great.
And also the Fela days as well. Wasn't that your last gig with The Stunning? Because The Stunning kind of came and went, didn't you? What was the reason for breaking up back in 94?
Well, we were together for 7 years, which was, you know, long enough, I suppose, in the music business. Mm. And I suppose we got to a point where, I mean, our music was very diverse. Like, if you look at the singles that we released, the first four singles that we released, they're all on Paradise and the Picture House. The first one was Got to Get Away, and that was a country song. And we had been listening to a lot of Steve Earle at the time, an album called Guitar Town. And that really inspired our first single, Got to Get Away. And then the next single was Half Past Two, which was something like, you know, a song Burt Bacharach would have written. And then it was Romeo's on Fire, which had a kind of a Latino rock feel, because we'd gone to see a band called Los Lobos in the Olympia. And they were kind of an American, Latino, Tex-Mex kind of a vibe. And that influenced Romeo's on Fire. And then the next single was Brewing Up a Storm, which had a kind of a broody, Doorsy rock feel to it. Mm. And so record companies, we were sending off our tapes and demos to record companies to try and see could we get like a major record deal. But they ran a mile from us because they couldn't figure out what kind of band we were, you know, file under what. And so we couldn't get a deal. So we decided to record Paradise in the Picture House ourselves. So we financed the recording of that album, which in retrospect was the best thing we ever did. This was long before, like most artists are doing that now themselves. And we did it back in, all those singles were financed by the band.
What were you doing part-time jobs and all that kind of thing to get the money together?
No, we were pretty much full-time as a band. We were just gigging all the time, and every penny we got, you know, we didn't take any money for ourselves. All the money basically went into the band and funding recording sessions.
But how did you survive day to day then, Steve? What did you do for your rent and your food and all that kind of thing?
We were all on the dole.
Oh, stop it.
So we have to thank the Irish Social Welfare. We used to go in and sign on in Galway every week. And I have to say, like, they were so good to us, you know. They, as the band started to sort of become known and they were writing about us in the local papers and all of that, of course the people in the Dole office became aware that this is what we were doing. So we'd be going in to sign on, and sometimes the girl would say, how long more do you think it'd take now before you can sign off, you know? Mm-hmm. And we'd say, we have an album coming out now, you know, it'll be out in the next month or so. And hopefully if that goes well, we'll be able to sign off, you know. So they were brilliant. They supported us and they knew that we were working hard to try and get off the dole.
Do you remember how much the dole was then, Steve? Because I'd say it was about 30 quid or something. It was nothing, wasn't it?
It was about 30 quid. But I mean, my rent, I was renting, you know, towards the latter days of my time in Galway, I was renting a beautiful cottage at the mouth of Loch Corrib, just a couple of miles outside Galway City. And my rent was £16 a week. You know?
What was you getting out of a sandwich for that?
Yeah, you wouldn't get lunch, you know? So, it was, and I wrote, it was brilliant. It was a great place because it was the first time I kind of hadn't shared a house, you know, with a load of people. I had this place to myself most of the time. There were another couple of people, but they were never there. And so I wrote so many songs out in that place. It was great. So I got great value out of it.
You certainly did. Recording studio and everything, probably. For anybody, like anybody that comes into us on work experience or anything, and you ask them what year were they born, and you nearly collapse when you discovered that they were born in the 2000s, you know? You're like, you never experienced Italian 90. You missed out on Italian 90. I actually feel sorry for people who missed out in that era.
Yeah, it's a funny one. Like, when I look back on it, I'm amazed at what we managed to do without even having mobile phones. Like, I used to, before, I was in the early days, I was booking other bands' gigs myself. And I used to go to a coin box in Eyre Square in Galway with a bag of 50p's. And I would be calling people all around the country, even in London. I remember organizing, going to play in the Irish Rock Week in the Mean Fiddler in London. And I had to book flights and everything. And it was all done in a payphone with bags of 50p's. Until I discovered, actually, that the Great Southern Hotel, also on Eyre Square, had a payphone in the lobby, which was like in a lovely little comfortable, warm cubbyhole.
Ah.
And I would order a cup of tea and a sandwich, and I'd sit down. And it was like, this, for me, was like the height of comfort now.
And no one knocking on the door, the phone box saying, would you ever hurry up
No
there?
One knocking on the door. And the phone boxes were smelly and freezing cold. The draft came in on the door, and Jesus, it goes straight up the leg of your trousers and freeze the ghoulies off you.
Well, it made you appreciate life then, didn't it? How hard you had to work back then for your money.
There was no option. You didn't know any better. You
That's
know?
True, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm just amazed. Like, I remember we played Glastonbury in something like 1989 or 1990 or something. And we did all of that, like, with no mobile phones. I don't know how we all didn't get lost as well at Glastonbury, because we had to leave that night to drive back for a gig in County Cork. We were absolutely furious that we had that gig the next day, because we were just blown away by Glastonbury. But we all managed to find each other, make our way back to the van, and make it to the ferry in Holyhead. You know, with nobody with a phone. I mean, would people be able to do that now?
They wouldn't even be able to get down to the end of the road without a phone, I'd say. But the point is as well, Steve, you kind of didn't really want to be a musician at the start, did you? The plan was to be an actor, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So confidence on stage was no issue then?
I was always, you know, the first band I was in was a new wave punky band called New Testament that was formed by a friend of mine called Eamon Dowd. And, I joined that band as a guitarist. And I was really painfully shy. Like, I was so shy I couldn't even face the audience. I kind of stood sideways. I just watched Eamon with my side, you know, I faced my my right arm to the audience. And so after that, I was always interested in the theatre and films and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to try acting, and I applied to a couple of after school acting courses, acting colleges, like even RADA in London and all. And of course, I didn't get accepted because I hadn't even been in the school play or anything. After I finished college in Galway and I left New Testament, or the band kind of disbanded, I walked into the Druid Theatre in Galway one day and I asked for a job. And they gave me a job as a sort of, you know, an assistant running out, getting coffees. And then I ended up doing some small walk-on part. Then I was a sound operator. I was Gary Hines, the director. I was her assistant on a production. And I absolutely loved it. I was there for about 2 years. And then I moved to Dublin to pursue an acting career and discovered the harsh reality of it. I was on the dole for a year, you know, couldn't even find out about auditions. By the time I'd find out, it was already cast.
Yeah.
Again, pre-internet.
Yeah.
And I used to go to gigs every night in the Underground and Dame Street, and there was loads of venues. There was just so many bands starting off around that time in Dublin in the wake of U2's success. You know, you had A House, Something Happens, Subterraneans, The Golden Horde, I suppose The Blades were still going, and there was loads of, it was a great buzz. Everybody was in a band.
Yeah.
I just decided one day, that's it, I'm going to start a band, and I can do it of my own volition. I don't have to wait for someone to say, like at an audition, you know, okay, you got the job, now you can work. You know, you just went out and did it.
Yeah.
And it was a great feeling of very liberating.
Good job that you could
sing.
That's
how The Stunning were born.
We skipped over actually there. We were talking about, you know, how The Stunning came to break up in 94. You were saying you'd been together 7 years. So what was the reason then behind the break? You just had enough?
Yeah, sorry, I never answered that question properly. A lot of it was down to the fact that record labels, I think, found us too diverse musically. So we never got a record deal. So as a result, our records were never released outside of Ireland. I think some label in Japan might have imported them or something like that. But our records were never distributed outside of Ireland. So we made a number of trips. We spent any money we made, we pumped back into the band. We did tours in the UK supporting the B-52s, and we opened up for Bob Dylan on, I think it was 5 nights in a row in the Hammersmith Odeon. And We'd put out Brewing Up a Storm over there as a single, but we didn't have the weight of a label behind us to exploit that with radio and touring and all of that. And we couldn't do it on our own. So we just had a series of disappointments, you know, and it was so expensive going to the States and going over there and playing showcase gigs. But just nobody bit, you know what I mean? We couldn't get that deal. So we'd come back to Ireland and we'd tour more, and it just got harder and harder, and we became more disappointed with the fact that we weren't getting that break abroad. And we just decided then in 1994 it wasn't going to happen for us outside of Ireland, and we just didn't want to see it, you know, just slowly dissipating here and to see the crowd diminishing and diminishing. And we just thought, you know, let's quit while the band is still held in high esteem, and quit and everybody go and do something else, you know.
Fail in 94 was the final gig, and you were going off stage and you were saying, we'd love to say we'll be back, but we won't be back, this is it. So what did everyone go off and do then in the meantime? Because I often wonder about that, you know, people who are quite well known as well in music or on telly or whatever, it's hard, isn't it, to try and think, right, what else can I do?
Yeah. Derek joined the Saw Doctors. Derek, our guitar player. The Saw Doctors were quick off the mark there. Derek's an amazing musician. They snapped him up fairly lively. And so Jimmy, who plays like trumpet and percussion and keyboards and all, he's a multi-instrumentalist. He's been playing with Christy Moore now for over 10 years. Jimmy, I think, joined Riverdance. He was in the Riverdance band, and he spent a lot of time on the road in America, mostly playing with Riverdance, and he was there for a good while. And then he came back, and so he's a very much in-demand trad musician now, specializes with percussion and the Bowron in particular. And then Cormac, the drummer, he plays with so many different artists, west of the Shannon mostly, and he's a kind of big in-demand session drummer in Galway. And then myself and Joe formed The Walls. So we started writing and demoing new material. The studio became more, you know, we had to learn our way around the studio. We'd always just gone into studios and recorded our singles and albums really quickly, and somebody else did all the technical end of it. Mm-hmm. So we learned how to use the studio, the equipment, the recording equipment and all that. And we started demoing our own stuff and trying to find a new sound. So The Walls debut album came out in 2000. After 2 years spent in London, we were signed to Columbia Records, and that didn't work out. So we left the label, came back to Ireland, based ourselves in Dublin, and we put out the first Walls album in 2000. So The Walls took up a lot of our time.
And Steve, you know, the music industry, it's such a tough time because of COVID. How has it affected you?
Well, a whole year of gigs gone. They've all been cancelled. A lot of them rescheduled to next year. Some of them will be, you know, that have been rescheduled 3 times now. Like, say, we were supposed to do the Olympia last March. That's been moved about 3 times already. It's now March 2021 for that gig, and I suspect that will get moved back as well. We published a book, the Paradise in the Picture House songbook, and an awful lot of work went into it, mostly by my brother Joe. And it's a beautiful book, and it's like a companion piece with the album, but it's a standalone book as well. We printed a shitload of those, and also we pressed loads of copies of the LP, because it's the first time since 1990 that Paradise in the Picture House is available on vinyl. And so we've boxes and boxes of those that we're supposed to sell at the gigs. And so now we're just trying to push the online sales. We've partnered with Dublin Vinyl, who press the vinyl, and they're shipping all our stuff now as well. So they're shipping the LP and the book bundled together, or you can buy them individually. So we're trying to sort of, you know, suggested to people as a potential Christmas present.
Oh, and I was going to say, Christmas is coming.
Yeah.
Is that vinyl? Can you get that on a CD as well for people who would have no way of playing the vinyl?
Yeah. We've gone and made more CDs as well of the album. So people can buy the CD with the book, or the CD on its own, or the book on its own, whatever. There's all kinds. It's all on the website. You know, if you go to the store on the website, it takes you straight to the Dublin Vinyl Shop, and all the different bundles are there. So we've kind of gone this year from actually being on stage performing, and we've become like sort of digital marketing entrepreneurs. We've had to sort of learn how to push our stuff. I don't want to call it product because it sounds so corporate, but all of our, you know, our music and the book is a new thing for us. And it's a really nice thing because, I mean, CD sales are declining, but the book is, it's something really nice. It's nice to have something physical in your hands, you know, that you can sign for people. And plus it has all the chords and the arrangements for guitar and piano. So people can learn. That's how I learned guitar. Sitting down with a piece of songbook.
Oh, very good. And then personally, for during COVID, how have you been feeling? Because people, some people are grand and other people are just feeling so down that they just cannot wait for all this to be over. How have you been personally, Steve?
I like everyone, there are good days and bad days. There are definitely days when I just don't know what to do. I keep kind of scrambling around because I'm always busy, and it's always kind of you know, because I've never actually been employed by anyone. It's always you know, creating my own work for the band. We're always like planning something, and so there are days when I feel I should be busier, but like it's like there's nothing to do, you know. I've kind of done whatever there is to do and I have to wait for responses or whatever. There are some days I just, you know, I feel I'm on a treadmill. There are some days that are just really tedious and I actually have to sort of try and slow down because I always expect things to happen really quickly, and you know, especially when you're creating the work for yourself. So I'm still getting used to it, you know. It's pretty tedious. Like this morning I went out and I went for a run, and I don't run regularly. I try to, but I really felt better after it, actually.
Yeah,
I went up to Sundrive Park in Kimmage and I ran around there for as long as my lungs could bear it. And I came home and I did feel better, you know.
Are you a man for doing the housework?
I did a lot of DIY in the first lockdown.
Right. Yeah, so you're going to need a professional to come in and repair all that DIY work that you did, or are you good?
No, I'm, you know what? I'm handy enough. I painted the whole inside of the house and I did a good job, you know. I prepped it all first with I went around with the polyfiller and filled all the cracks, you know, and I had the caulk gun and all that, sanded it down, put a primer, painted it. Only thing is I didn't finish it.
There's some days you have nothing to do and you're telling me that you didn't finish the painting job you started in March.
I know.
We should go way out of that.
I got to a point where painting was like so bloody tedious. I just went, oh my God, this is wrecking my head. And there's still a few bits around the house where the masking tape is still up there because I still need to finish it.
It's far easier being a musician and an actor, really, isn't it, than doing an actual hard day's job? Sure, why would you be doing a hard day's work at all? Listen, it's been absolutely great to catch up, and have a look out for that T-shirt now for me, won't you? The green and black one.
I will.
With the stunning on it.
You can still see that. If that's lying around the studio, which it could be, I'll give you a shout.
Do. I'd love to get a hold of that. Yeah. You're very good, Steve. Take care. And what's the website again if we want to get our hands on that book and the vinyl or the CD?
It's thestunning.net.
Easy peasy. You're very good. Thanks so much, Steve.
There's lots of entertaining stuff on the website as well. There's a whole page of all the old archived videos and TV appearances and all. You'll have a good laugh.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. I love it. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat to us today. And hopefully we might get to meet in person one of these days when we're all back to normal and we can have guests in studio and actually mix with people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Steve. Talk to you soon.
All the best.
See you now. This is Something for the Weekend. It's Classic Hits.